From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
This morning we speak first with Dr. Michael Stein, a professor of health law, policy and management of the School of Public Health at Boston University. Stein will distinguish for us the difference between health and healthcare in our country, how our relative wealth determines our health and our longevity. He tells this in a book in which he primarily introduces stories from his patients. They're stories of poverty, of sadness, and sometimes of hope. Dr. Stein's new book is called Broke: Patients Talk About Money with Their Doctor. Then Bassem Youssef, who was probably one of the most well-known, loved, and hated people in Egypt before he fled to the U.S. in exile following his political satire show Al Burnamag. He's the subject of a documentary called Tickling Giants. He came to this country and had to completely reinvent himself. His show, Al Burnamag, was the most watched show in history in Egypt, with some 30 to 40 million viewers each week. He'll join us to talk about what still makes us laugh, about immigration, about culture, and about mental health in these strange times. This is The Mountain Life. We'll be back after these words from our underwriters.
This is Doug Wells of Albion Financial Group. Albion supports KPCW, and we applaud the station's commitment to local nonprofits. As a wealth manager, Albion believes in making investment decisions. One investment that always pays off is investing in the causes you care about through your favorite nonprofits. AlbionFinancial.com, helping clients make a lifetime of financial decisions.
Hi, this is Steve Roney, owner of Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. I'm a proud resident of Park City and a loyal supporter of KPCW and all it does for our community. Our agents in Summit and Wasatch counties can be reached at any of our 30 offices or at our website, bhhsutah.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. My next guest is Dr. Michael Stein. He's professor and chair of health law, policy, and management of the School of Public Health at Boston University. He's a primary care doctor and has been a leader in general medicine and substance use research and policy for two decades. He has longstanding clinical experience and research interest in HIV care, opioid addiction, behavior change, and health communication. He's author of several books and the executive editor of Public Health Post. He joins me today to talk about his new book, Broke: Patients Talk About Money with Their Doctor. It is a look at poverty in America. Dr. Michael Stein, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thanks for having me.
This is such an important topic, and I think it has reared its unfortunate head even more so during this pandemic, this sort of disparity becoming a bigger disparity between those who are covered by health care and who have the resources and those who don't, and probably, unless things change hugely, never will have the kind of health care coverage and the resources to be able to get the health coverage they need.
Yeah, COVID's definitely changed our world. It certainly changed the world of people who were employed and are now unemployed. And as you know, so much of health coverage comes through people's employment, unfortunately, in the United States, fortunately for some and unfortunately for others. And so there's been quite a drop off of millions of people from insurance at this point. And in addition to that, obviously, we have a country that's already split financially with great disparities, even unrelated to healthcare costs. And so the book is really about my experience of talking to people who don't have much money in my role as a primary care doctor in my hometown for the past 30 years. That's what Broke is about, people's voices and talking about money, because they come in and talk to me about alimony payments and funeral costs and utility bills and cars breaking down, and all of those things are only worse at the moment.
Mm. The book is Broke. Patients talk about money with their doctor, as you said. Why did you decide to, you know, create a whole book based on conversations? I mean, I think there are lots of books out there about, you know, posing the questions and detailing the issues and offering up possible solutions. But you just wanted to give a voice to some of the people that you talk with.
Yeah, thanks. I have a split life, right? One part of my life is that I work as a primary care doctor in an office. And because of where I live and because I've been doing it for a long time, I've known people for a while and they talk to me. So that's one part of my life. And another part of my life is as a public health person, a person who teaches in a public health school and thinks about big issues. And I understand that while poverty can only be solved on a universal basis by political actions, and therefore we all need to be political, it also takes place on a person-to-person basis. And so, you know, when people read books, they spend time with people who are not like them, right? And so this was my chance to tell readers about maybe a part of the world they might not know so well. And of course, reading allows you to do that slowly and at your own pace. And I felt that the voices of the people who I see in my office are intriguing and interesting and sad and poignant. And you know, I've come to admire how people get through the world. And so I wanted to share that with readers.
That's really nice to hear. Let's talk about the person who, for example, has always been employed by a company, whether it's a smaller or larger company that has provided healthcare benefits, who lost their job during COVID, who for maybe the first time in their lives were facing this question that they that had never really popped up for them before, who maybe couldn't even afford the COBRA payment after their job was terminated for their healthcare benefits. Talk about that person.
Yeah, well, it's a stunning moment for people who've worked their entire lives, need a paycheck and don't have a paycheck, right? So COVID has done a lot of things in terms of mental health for Americans. We're about to see a sort of wave of mental health problems as that will, I think, only increase as time goes on, as even as we come out of COVID and people realize, well, the world is slowly coming back to normal, but my life has been utterly disrupted. So all of the loneliness and the isolation that COVID has imposed on so many people, combined with the fraughtness of losing your job and your income and what are you going to do next, is really quite devastating to people. And, you know, the book Broke is about poverty, right? So it's about new poverty and it's about old poverty. And we think of poverty often in the public health and policy world as a number, right? An income level, a wealth figure, a Medicaid threshold, some target. But for people, you know, poverty really is a feeling. And that feeling is one of deprivation and worry about money. I really describe it as having sort of less bandwidth when you have very little money and you're worried about getting by. You're not paying attention to many things in the world. Poverty is like this strange tax on your thinking and reasoning. And that feeling, I think, is going to be and is a new one for many people who have lost their jobs and are at a moment in the economy that's not particularly optimistic.
And so what does the person do who has lost their health care benefits, who is diabetic, for example, and now cannot afford their insulin? I mean, I know these are the types of people that you talk to, and it's like the as you talk about poverty as a concept, it's an instantaneous poverty that, you know, talk about mental health. If you've got a physical issue that suddenly you don't know how to resolve because you can't get your medication, it becomes an emotional issue in a big way, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I think that all medical issues are emotional issues, right, that last any period of time. I mean, most of what I see in a primary care office are emotional issues that often come in disguised as physical symptoms. your person who has diabetes has had a problem for a long time in America if they don't have a lot of money, right? Insulin is very expensive. It's also what you need to survive. And so you're in a bind, and people get around this in all sorts of ways, from borrowing from friends to getting a prescription that they can pay for and using a half or a quarter of what they should be taking because at least they have something in them, but they can't afford the rest. If you're in a Medicaid non-expansion state, if your governor and legislature has not expanded Medicaid and you don't have access to healthcare insurance, you are doubly worried at this point, and is one of our reasons for wanting to expand Medicaid everywhere, because we know that getting to universal coverage of Americans in some way will save lives and will save that person who doesn't have their insulin and misses it for 3 days from coming into the hospital and requiring 4 days to get their blood sugar settled again and receiving in exchange for that unnecessary visit a $10,000 medical bill, which then only makes their financial spiral worse. So we live in troubling times in America. We have for a while, because so many people have been uninsured, even with Medicaid expansion. And even as you pointed out, the people who have insurance often don't have full coverage, right? Many people don't have their medications paid for. Elderly people don't have medications paid for. Medicare doesn't pay for medications. So there are lots of people dealing with this drug pricing problem that you read about in the news all the time, but it preceded COVID, and unfortunately it's going to continue past COVID.
Mm. My guest is Dr. Michael Stein. He's professor and chair of health law, policy, and management of the School of Public Health at Boston University. He's a primary care doctor. He's the author of a new book called Broke: Patients Talk About Money with Their Doctor. Dr. Stein, I'm wondering, I think this conversation is so important because as someone, and I'm in the fortunate place, as many are, that I work for a company that provides wonderful healthcare benefits. Some of these questions come up. You feel like, while you may be a compassionate and empathetic person, you have no idea of the struggles. And I think that's why this conversation is so important for all of us to realize, you know, how much is Medicaid being expanded during this time, if at all? You know, what are the main questions that people who are in the fortunate position need to ask and need to find out? And what can we do to help in our communities?
Yeah, I'm delighted that you asked that. So you're moving from my book, which is a very personal set of stories that is not meant to be sentimental, where each patient tells their story in one page about something that's affected them financially and that may affect them monetarily, to this much higher level, which is really not in the book, but I certainly have thoughts about, which is that, you know, that the choice to have a country where 1 in 6 children lives in poverty, that's before COVID, it's going to go higher, which is a rate that is unique among our peer nations, is a choice, right? That is a political choice. Every politician claims to be in favor of equal opportunity, and every politician that you will meet will say that they believe children are not responsible for being poor, and yet we don't fix this, right? We don't fix that 1 in 6 children live in poverty. So this is a purely political matter, and you have to have politicians who you choose who consider this an important issue and need to address it. Now, there are many ways to address it. I have some thoughts about how to address it, but the fact is this needs to be on the schedule, and it is on the agenda, right, at the moment when we're talking about COVID relief packages and unemployment benefits, and those are important parts. Increasing minimum wage is an important part. This has been studied for decades, right? Poverty is not new in the United States, and there are certain relatively simple but expensive solutions that we Americans can decide whether we want or not, right? So if you gave every child of a poor family $2,700 a year. You gave their parent $2,700 a year. We would cut child poverty by 1/3 in 1 minute. Hmm. That's it. So that's a price tag. Do we want to pay it? Do we not? Do we consider poverty, you know, the important issue of our time? And I, as a public health person, do. I think it is the root of so much of our healthcare spending problems, and is a moral obligation on top of all of the healthcare and public health reasons to do it. But it is at the highest level a political issue, and we know how to solve large parts of it.
Tell us a story from the book about that person who, unlike the one that we talked about earlier, is the one who's never been covered. You know, maybe works at a job where the healthcare benefits don't exist, and they find themselves in Park City. Here we have a wonderful people's health clinic for that person. Yet there are probably lots of people who don't even access that sort of clinic. Tell us the story of someone who's never had health insurance.
Well, there are lots of people who haven't had health insurance in America ever, right? There are lots of them. And, I can tell you about one and how close they get to, you know, falling out the bottom, right? People can do without health insurance as long as they're well, right? That's what health insurance does, is cover you only when you need it, when you're not well necessarily. Now, we'd all like to get preventive care, and the first thing that goes away, such as cancer screening and mammograms and even vaccinations, those are things that go away if you don't have any health insurance. And so I've seen plenty of people who simply come in without any health insurance to emergency rooms and present initially with advanced cases of disease one or disease two because they've had no health insurance and have had reasons to delay seeking any sort of care. But, you know, the larger issue is, even if you have some health insurance, which is a great benefit, particularly for mental health, particularly because it eliminates this worry of, if I have a health bill, I will go bankrupt, which is the primary reason for bankruptcy in America. I think that still people can have health insurance and be very fragile in terms of how much money they have in the bank. And so any sort of unexpected bill can really knock them under, right? So 3/4 of Americans who work full time right now live paycheck to paycheck. And if they had a $400 expense because their carburetor broke, they can't pay it. That's 3 out of 4 Americans can't pay a $400 bill with cash. They don't have that much saved. So imagine walking around that way thinking about, well, what if I get sick? What if I need a medication? I remember talking to one person who had just arrived in the country with her parents, and she said, the first thing my father said when I moved into the country was, don't get sick because we can't pay for it. Mm. So, you know, that's a shocking thing to say to a young person who's just arriving in the country, and it is our time, unfortunately. And people like that will walk around ashamed and feeling worthless and feeling invisible and keeping their fingers crossed that they don't get sick.
Hmm. Years ago, I went to Cuba, and when I was there, I encountered an American man, sort of older, or, you know, maybe in his 60s, and he had come to Cuba to get back surgery. And I was flabbergasted. Right? Because it's Cuba, right?
Sure.
And he was elated that he could get excellent medical care for a very low cost. And I just thought, what does that say about our healthcare in the United States? In, you know, what we are led to believe our whole lives, the greatest country with the greatest healthcare. And when we know that we're somewhere down, where are we in the world? What is our ranking?
Yeah. So let me try to distinguish something for your listeners. There's healthcare and then there's health.
Yeah.
Healthcare are hospitals and doctors, and we use healthcare when we're ill. health is trying to stay away from doctors and healthcare and trying to remain well, trying to avoid illness. That's what health is. So health is translated into, in my mind, life expectancy. If you have good health for your entire years, you will live longer. And the connection between health and wealth in America, unlike in Cuba, for instance, is profound, right? Healthier people are wealthier people. And the clearest evidence of this at the population level is if you look at the poorest county in the United States right now, which is in South Dakota, happens to be at the moment. And if you're a baby born today in that county, your life expectancy is somewhere around 68 or 69 years old. And if you are born, happen to be lucky enough to have parents who live in the richest county in the United States, which is often in Virginia, you are, as a baby born today, will live somewhere into your mid-80s. So that is a 15-year life expectancy, or I would call it health differential, between being born in one state or another. I mean, that's shocking, and it's simply based on wealth. And so your Cuban example is a nice example. They have much more of a safety net than we do. And this person that you know went to Cuba, and lots of people travel outside of the United States to get medical care because it's less expensive. Americans are commonly trying to pull in medications from Canada because they're about one quarter to one third of the price of the same medication across the border. So there's a lot of that going on. But this notion that health and wealth are very connected is important. And again, health care is what you want to avoid. I'm a doctor. I'm telling you want to avoid healthcare. Healthcare is, if you can avoid it, it's great. And the way to avoid it is by living in a country that pays attention to those things that make us healthier. Mm. And those things are, you know, clean water and tested food and good neighborhoods and less violence and all of the things that we call the social drivers of health. So we get very caught up in healthcare, which costs our economy $2 trillion. And we spend a tiny bit of money on trying to keep people well and healthy. And that's been part of the COVID public health crisis, right? We don't have a great public health prevention infrastructure. And when we needed it, and when we're needing it now in terms of vaccine distribution, we're caught because we have invested in expensive machinery for very sick people, but haven't invested in the infrastructure for people who need to stay well.
Before I let you go, Michael, I just wanted to ask you about, I mean, it's along this notion of health starts back with culture. And it seems to me that the culture in this country, just the proliferation of the grab and go, the convenience, the drive-through, the focus away from sitting down at the table, preparing a meal made out of fresh, whole food, which in some places, in food deserts, is a luxury. But we also sort of don't want that. We, so long ago, many, many decades ago, moved away from that. I think possibly in this country, beyond other countries in the developed world. I think about Western Europe, and there's still the small neighborhood market where you go and you get fresh produce, and focus is on the joy of living, and living a good life is about sitting down at the table. And I just want to mention that, or I want to ask you about how far do we have to go back in our culture to change the way we live so that we can have health?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, and thank you for asking it. I think, you know, if you look back at life expectancy, again, which I consider sort of our grandest measure of health, we were very similar to Western Europe, which are our peer income countries, 40 or 50 years ago. We were in the middle or near the top of that. We're now at the very bottom somewhere down near Chile in terms of these health indicators. And it's a bit embarrassing, and it's a particularly embarrassing when you think about how much money that we spend on healthcare. So my answer is, how far do we have to go back? Probably 40 or 50 years. So what's happened in those 40 or 50 years? Well, I would argue that part of what's happened is we've seen this growing wealth disparity. And what we know is that, again, wealthy people live longer. They have no problems getting good food and doing the activities that you just described. They're not in supermarket deserts, right? They're not in emergency room deserts. They're living their lives and have grand life expectancy. At the lower end of our growing disparity, right, the bottom 20% of our population is quite ill, and they're the ones who've dropped out the bottom, both in terms of income and in terms of health. And how to fix that, again, I think is a sort of major moral obligation, but that is easier to think about in terms of health obligations, right? Moral is big and has a capital M at the beginning of it, and it's very hard for us to think about that, although many religious people think in terms of moral obligations to the poor. I think of this as health is really our lever to understand these things. Again, not healthcare, but trying to create a society that pays attention to those things that you were talking about, eating better, going to school longer, having enough money, having pre-K students starting schools so that some of these inequalities begin to get evened out. So again, it's really been four generations. And what you see, part of the explanation for that is this rise in obesity, which is a whole other subject, but is sort of the flip side of this life expectancy, right? We have 40 to 50% of our population is obese. And that obesity is because we don't pay attention to these food things that you're talking about. It's not just because people make bad food decisions. It's because they live in food deserts and they can't get fresh food. It's because sugar products are inexpensive in the United States. It's because we have big portions. So there are a variety of sort of cultural and political reasons why we've become an obese nation, and an obese nation that has more diabetes, and a nation that has diabetes dies younger. And I think that's the split that you've seen over the past 40 or 50 years.
The book is Broke: Patients Talk About Money with Their Doctor. It's a look at poverty in America. My guest, Dr. Michael Stein. Michael, thank you so much for joining me today on The Mountain Life. It's a very important book, I believe.
Lynn, thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.